mean, our goal is liberation. Our goal is communism.
Мира и счастья всем вам, друзья мои.
And, you know, we have a unique responsibility to act from the heart of empire, the belly of the beast. The most important thing that we can do is take that empire down from within.
Our role ultimately is to facilitate our own empire's failure in ways that we can, ultimately to overthrow our own empire.
U.S. imperialism is not a thing that can be reformed away. It has to be overthrown through revolutionary struggle.
And to build a mass movement that can use the leverage of workers to hit the kill switch on American imperialism here within the American empire.
Our candidates run as Democrats. We're on the Democratic Party ballot line. We contest the primaries. And when they're in the legislature, they're part of the Democratic Party caucus. But we don't agree with the way the Democratic Party establishment organizes or runs its party apparatus.
It's no secret that the Democratic Socialists of America hate the Democratic Party.
I think we're all on the same page that we hate the Democratic Party.
The Democratic Party is not really our friend. It isn't.
So why are the DSA such major players in the Democratic Party? This odd relationship can be understood with the cuckoo analogy. In nature, the cuckoo survives by trickery. It lays its egg in another bird's nest. The unsuspecting parents raise the imposter as their own until the cuckoo grows strong enough to push the true chicks out. The DSA is the cuckoo inside the Democratic Party.
DSA is not the Democratic Party.
We must separate ourselves from the toxic Democratic Party.
We can put forward a clear, aggressive, principled strategy that pushes back against the Democratic leadership and the Democratic Party as a whole.
DSA candidates run as Democrats in safe blue districts. They slip through low turnout primaries. And once inside, they use the Democratic label as camouflage while advancing an extremist anti-American agenda far beyond the party's mainstream.
Democrat Socialists of America meeting in Denver, more than half of them are wearing the mask. They also look completely deranged. It looks like another Antifa convention or something. And it's very, very sad. But you have to understand the psychology of people. They believe they're really going to get a free lunch. So they're already primed to be in a cult. And just like the Nazis wore an armband, these people have purple-green hair, you know, look super unhealthy, take SSRIs, take all the deadly shots, and wear the mask because it is a sacrament that they basically buy into the system and whatever it says. I mean, right out of the corporate media, right out of the universities, right out of BlackRock, whatever BlackRock pushes in their ESG scores, most powerful, richest consortium on Earth, 87% of world assets, they follow it to a T.
You have to force behaviors. And if you don't force behaviors, whether it's gender or race or just any way you want to say the composition of your team, you're going to be impacted.
So there they are wearing their masks that don't protect you. They always knew it gives you bacterial pneumonia. There they are completely buying into the system. And you just see how desperate they are, looking like total victims, totally lost, believing that Mondami and all these people are going to give them something free. For a little while, they'll get something free here and there, but it's only transfer power into the state.
DSA victories prove their plan works.
I think that the model that we used in New York is 100% replicable.
But it's the illusion that they're getting something free they like. Just like people buy lottery tickets, even though it's one of the worst investments you can engage in. It's the same thing as people going to casinos. You know, the house in the end always wins in the aggregate. So it's a big problem. And of course, the fact that we have a crony capitalist system that's vertically integrated, run by the very same people pushing communism.
It's our duty, DSA, to cultivate this power.
The cuckoo is in the nest, not a Democrat, but Zohran Mamdani, an extremist within the DSA.
We understand that winning an election is not an end. It is a means to an end.
These corporate fascists who've consolidated the wealth of 1%, like 1/100th of 1%, people think that this is capitalism we're under when it's really monopoly, oligopoly, and where's Teddy Roosevelt to bust up the trust when you need him?
Nice try, globalist, but Alex Jones is still here, and he's not f***ing leaving.
Introducing the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Showerhead.
You're not just drinking tap water, you're showering in it, breathing the steam, and soaking your skin in it every day. When you take a hot shower, that hot water opens your pores and creates steam. That means chlorine, lead, and many other contaminants in your tap water can hit your skin, your hair, and the air you breathe inside your own bathroom. And unlike most shower filters on the market, this has independent third-party testing. SGS testing showed a 95-plus percent lead reduction using the system, over 99% chlorine removal, and many other chemicals. The system installs directly onto a standard shower head. It literally just takes seconds. No plumber, no tools, no modification to your plumbing. Regularly $139. Today you can get it for just $97.99. That's 30% off. VIP members of the AlexShipStore.com get it for as low as $69.99. That is beyond a steal. Secure yours now while supplies last at TheAlexShipStore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. It is the Ides of July, Wednesday, 15th of July, 2026. Glad you're here with us on the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. Share that link. Tune in. We got a lot of stuff to cover today. The Joe Rogan episode with Vice President J.D. Vance has dropped. We've got lots of clips from that. Only had time to preview a few of them, so we'll watch them live. But they're pretty good from what I've seen so far. Very excited to look into some of that because he actually gets into some of the stuff we talk about quite a bit, which is things like the actual reason that people are going over to communism and socialism being the utter failure of the American government to restrain capitalism and actually provide a life for their middle class. So we'll go to some of those clips here in just a second. We're also going to do something people keep recommending that I do, which is actually read the bills that we're opposing pertaining to the merger of Israeli and American military infrastructure, technology, and data sharing. There's this bizarre idea that if you read the bill, you'll suddenly not be against it all of a sudden. No, I'm still very much against it. I have read the bills. They are exactly what everybody says they are. They're a bill to merge the Israeli and American military, and it's complete treason, and this is obvious, but there's a bunch of people I hope you're getting paid if you're actually supporting this. There's absolutely no reason to do it, and we'll investigate that. But as I said yesterday, and I tweeted it out today, that for me, this is a red line. And I have not been somebody who's been gung-ho about, you know, let's vote for the Democrats this time around. I've said I understand why it's a strategy people like Nick Fuentes are promoting. I think it's a valid strategy. I think it's true that the Republicans do think that they don't have to earn your vote. I know from personal experience and talking to people higher at the higher up levels, like they literally think like we don't have to do what our voters want because they'll keep voting for us no matter what. They really do think that. So we really do have to dissuade them of that idea. So I'm fine with that. I'm in favor of that. But I've also always said abstaining is more my style. I just can't bring myself to vote for Democrats because despite the biggest threats to our liberties coming from Israel, the Democrats are not far behind and it may actually be ahead. However, if this passes, I'm voting Democrat. Again, literally because if the Democrats win, they might actually undo this and charge people that voted for it with treason, which I would be in favor of. So I tweeted that out and I got a lot of disparate reactions. The funniest one to me is people being like, "Everybody, why are you panicking about this? You're panicking about it." And it's like, oh, am I panicking? I'm against it. I think it's horrible. I think it's stupid. I think it's wrong. I think it shouldn't happen. Is that panicking? No, the panic is we have to do this or Israel will be destroyed by Iran and Muslims will rape your daughter. Pass the bill quick. Quick, we got to give all of our weapons to Israel or else the West will fall. It's like, no, Israel's not even the West. They don't even believe in what we believe in. They're not even fighting for our values. We don't share values with them, really. There's a little bit of an overlap, but when it's convenient. So it's very weird. People are like, you're panicking about this. Like, it just shouldn't exist. It shouldn't exist. It shouldn't be in there. I am. I'm outraged that our government is willingly selling itself out to Israel. Yeah, you should be out. Everybody should be outraged by this. There's not even an argument that this could possibly benefit the American people. And it's very clearly a method by which Israel can continue to receive billions of dollars of American support. They just don't have to actually be responsible for it or, you know, have it delivered to them by an act of Congress. They just want access directly to our bank account so that they can get whatever they want whenever they need it. And it never even has to be told to the American people. Obviously, this is the thing that's happening. Yeah, I said this is my red line. If this passes into law, I'm voting straight Democrat in November. At least the Dems might actually reverse this and charge the Republicans with treason, which they should. So we'll read into it. We'll read them all. We absolutely will. And they just say exactly what everybody says that it does. Can y'all go back to that page? What was that community note? Because I hadn't seen that community noted yet. I think it was saying that the cat turd or the cuck turd, cat turd parody. What does that say? We got to know. We got to know if it's real. Can you click on it? Should tell you what it is. The claim that Republicans voted to merge U.S. with military with Israel misrepresents bills enhancing defense cooperation like H.R. 1229 and NDAA provisions on tech sharing and aid. No legislation merges the military. Okay. Okay, sure. Yeah, go ahead and hit no on that one. No, it absolutely does merge the militaries. Like, what a strange rhetorical quibble. What a quibble. We're not merging. We're just, you know, integrating significantly. Oh, okay, great. Crazy. We're also going to be talking a lot about sexual morality on today's show, because I think we just got to, maybe I'll take calls on it. But I'm looking for answers. I'm looking for answers. We're going to try to puzzle out in real time what the hell's going on in the world, because I've not ever been presented or heard or been able to come up with myself a sufficient explanation as to why liberals in this country and lefties around the West feel the need to destroy everything that is even remotely sexual in everyday life, like getting rid of the like ringside girls at boxing matches or the F1 girls, or, you know, can't have attractive women in Nike ads anymore. We have to have nothing but, you know, obese monsters because beauty is offensive. But also, how dare you try to stop us putting hardcore pornography in your elementary school? Like, what explains that? So we're going to dig into that. There have been some examples recently of this exact phenomenon, and I'm just trying to get a handle on what the hell is motivating these people. And if you could even define a single principle or a moral imperative, like what do they think is going on? What are their values? We're going to try to figure this out. We're going to study this like an anthropologist. Because I guess the answer, they're all just insane idiots, is insufficient. I guess we need a more thorough answer than they're just insane morons and we can ignore them. I guess we can't ignore them anymore. So let's actually start with some of these J.D. Vance clips, because they just came out, and I don't think Alex had time to even see these because they came out while he was live, and we have a lot of these. Let's go first to clip 30 here. This is J.D. Vance talking about the Republicans passing the SAVE Act, and from what I saw of this clip, say I'm still a little reticent. We talked about this yesterday, but the filibuster, I have a love-hate relationship with. I actually think it's like it shouldn't be necessary, but it is. It's not like I remember one time. Sorry, I'll get to clip in a second. But there's one time that, do you remember the meme? There was a woman with pink shoes and she like filibustered for abortion. Wendy something. You guys remember this? It was in Austin. It was in the Texas State House, and you know, she talked for 18 hours or whatever to save abortion, I think it was. And she like wore pink shoes while she did it. So pink shoes became like a symbol of resistance. It was very obnoxious. It was all very annoying. But I remember at the time, my friend being like, you know, a win for democracy. I remember thinking, like, I don't think this is democracy. I don't even like democracy, but a filibuster is kind of the antithesis of democracy. The filibuster is when the minority, and it could be a minority of one, can hold up the proceedings for everybody else. That's like the opposite of democracy. So I've got I've always had this kind of love-hate relationship where I'm like, I like the filibuster because I'm a Republican, because I believe in minority rights, and I believe that just because the majority wants something doesn't mean they have a right to therefore enforce it on the minority. We should have methods by which we can stop these proceedings moving forward. At the same time, it ain't democracy. This isn't an expression of our democratic values. It's a weird little senatorial rule that's been convenient in, you know, stopping certain things over time. So anyway, the issue right now, I think, is that if you get rid of the filibuster, you're opening up the floodgates for what the left wants to do, and that we would have to use the filibuster to stop them from doing. We're not going to be able to stop them if we get rid of the filibuster. So if you get rid of the filibuster, it's got to be ahead of a legislative deluge. It's got to be, you have to have like 15 bills lined up so that you, and every bill has to be like, you know, elections. We have to, you know, massively discriminate against the Democrats in elections. We have to never let them get elected again. Mass deportations, fully funded, no stopping. Comply or we kill you. Like, it's got to be like a bunch of bills that would never pass normally, but if you get rid of the filibuster, you can pass them. And those bills have to, this is a gamble, right? You're gambling the filibuster. You're saying, if we do this, then we will remain in power. We will pass all these bills so that we never are subjected to Democratic bills for which we would need the filibuster to defeat. So if you're going to destroy the filibuster, you got to do it. And then you have to pass a ton of bills right after you do it to guarantee that the Democrats do not take power and then take advantage of this filibuster-free playground that you've now created. So that's my take. And I don't trust the current Republicans to do anything, let alone do enough to sufficiently keep Democrats out of power so that the lack of filibuster is no longer a threat. These people can't pass, you know, free ice cream day. They can't do anything. They can't get the Save Act passed. They have not passed a bill pertaining to the 14th Amendment or birthright citizenship or deportations or anything of the sort. So if you get rid of the filibuster now, you're literally just getting rid of it for the Democrats. You would get rid of the filibuster and then you would immediately get swept out of office. The Democrats would come in and have no barrier to implementing any of the insane programs that they would love to shove down our throats. So let's not get rid of the filibuster until you're ready to actually be serious about literally any of the problems that we're facing right now. Here's J.D. Vance talking about the filibuster.
Federal thing. So we are right now trying to pass the Save America Act. One of its main provisions is a requirement that you do voter ID. And we actually have, I think, a majority of the Senate that would support it. But this is just weird Senate procedural bullshit. There is a subsegment of people who want voter ID but won't blow up the filibuster in order to achieve it. And so they're so married to these old world Senate procedures that they're going to make it impossible for us to pass Save America. Now, we are, for what it's worth, trying to fix that and trying to address these like weird procedural archaic things. It's insane though. Like, have you ever – okay. I'm sure you hear people talk about the filibuster all the time.
Yeah.
I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole. Here's what the filibuster is. It is a pure Senate rule. It is a creation of the Senate procedures, which basically says that anything that has to do with the budget is a 50-vote threshold. And anything that – everything else, non-budgetary, is a 60-vote threshold. Now, as you can imagine, there's some gray area on things that maybe are count as budget issues and should be 50 or are not budget issues and count at 60. So what we have tried to persuade the Senate to do is to treat the voter ID as something that can fall within the 50-vote threshold. And there is no law. There's no provision in the Constitution. It is legitimately that there are senators who are so attached to the idea that budget is 50, non-budget is 60, that they're quite literally willing to prevent voter ID in America.
God.
So that's kind of confusing. I'm not sure what the, I thought that was the nuclear option that what's his name did the last Democratic, not the last one, but Harry Reid, wasn't it? Harry Reid did the nuclear option where you move it from 60 to 50 threshold. That's not the filibuster. The filibuster is playing on the Senate's rules for unlimited debate. I'm kind of confused by that. I don't, that's not, he was not talking about the filibuster, unless I missed something. But the whole point of the Senate was that it was where bills slowed down, that like you could have a popular movement that like really wanted something and they could jam it through the House really quickly. But then the Senate was supposed to be where it's like, okay, well, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Let's not get all, you know, caught up in the moment and let's really discuss this. And so there's unlimited debate time, which is what the filibuster is, which is why you have things like that Wendy lady wearing the pink sneakers, because you have to actually stand there and talk because it's a filibuster, because the provision is you can debate endlessly. So as long as you get up and are talking, they can't call time on you. And now that, but now there's like a workaround where it's like, look, do we really have to stand here and talk? Do we really have to do this performative thing where we talk the whole time? Can we just call out filibuster and you can just, let's just pretend I've been talking for 10 hours and just I'll see you here in 10 hours and let's pretend I was talking the whole time. So I'm a little bit unsure about, you know, what J.D. Vance was exactly talking about there, except that whether it's the filibuster or the 50 vote, 60 vote rule, it is perhaps the most frustrating thing about American politics right now is when these little board game rules get in the way of us saving our country, that we're trying to, you know, do dramatic actions to actually rescue our country from the edge of disaster, and we can't do it because the monopoly rules say you can't pass go without collecting $200. And it's like, really, really, this very arbitrary and inexplicable rule is just stopping us from doing what's right, even though it's obvious that this is the right thing to do. It is a little bit frustrating. It is. The thing is, though, this might be a good little dichotomy to display. Let's go to clip 31 here. So we just heard J.D. Vance on Joe Rogan talk about how the Republicans will not end the filibuster or change Senate rules at all in order to pass much needed common sense voter security measures. Meanwhile, here is the co-chair of the DSA talking about their plan once they're in power. Let's watch.
Who live in this country.
So would you like to abolish the Senate?
That's part of our platform. And we don't think that's extreme. We think it's a change that would help make this country more democratic.
We're going to get rid of the Senate, you know, to make it more democratic. Yeah, we're going to become an empire to protect democracy. So it's just a little informative dichotomy for you there. Republicans won't even change an arbitrary rule in the Senate. The DSA is like, we will be abolishing the Senate. So it's like, all right, tell you what, which is more important to you, preserving this one little Senate rule or the Senate itself? Because that's essentially the choice you're being asked to make. Either adhere to the Senate rule book that somebody came up with, don't pass the bill, get blown out in the midterms, and then have the DSA sweep in and eradicate the Senate itself. So if you care about the Senate rules, you should break the Senate rules. This is the situation we're in across the board here. If we care about the Constitution, we cannot have the Constitution tying our hands behind the back while we fight for the Constitution. Do we understand this? So that's the dichotomy there. J.D. Vance complaining about the Republicans refusing to change the rules of the Senate, the DSA being like, we don't think it's radical to abolish the Senate. We think that's common sense to make us more democratic. Okay. The Senate might be the most democratically elected out of all the branches of government. I mean, obviously, the Supreme Court has very little democratic involvement whatsoever, except that the senators you vote for, confirm the pieces, but that's, you know, a couple steps removed. The executive branch, obviously, we have the Electoral College, and while it's democratic to a certain degree, the breakdown of the Democratic College and the states it's actually very much what a republic is. And you have to, and that is what a republic is. And you remember, the Senate used to be not even elected. Right now, the Senate is elected by popular vote statewide. That is the most democratic method by which we choose leadership, right? It's the whole state. It's not even a single, you know, congressional district where you might have, you know, outsized influence compared to another congressional district of an equal time. It's the most democratic version. I guess you could make the argument that because there's two per state, no matter what the size of the state is, that that gives more weight to the smaller states. But here I am treating this as if they are actually thoughtful about political construct. They don't care. They just want power, and they see the Senate as a barrier to their power. So, yeah, screw them. No, we should go back to an undemocratic version of the Senate. The senators should be appointed by state legislatures. That's actually how it should work. We should be a republic. We should vote for representatives who themselves vote for representatives who themselves make law. But we're more democratic. And the more democratic we become, the worse everything gets. It's called a dependency. Let's go to clip 32 here. This is J.D. Vance talking about Republicans creating the conditions that fuel the rise of socialism. So this is what I've been begging Republicans to say forever. Let's see how J.D. Vance delivered it.
Does the socialism thing scare me? Yes. Is it the wrong solution? Yes. But one thing I try to persuade my fellow Republicans of is socialism is the alternative if we don't have a pathway to give people a sense that the system is not rigged and that the American dream is attainable. That's like our job. That's what we have to do. I'm not saying Rome was built in a day. It's not going to be easy to undo some of these economic trends. But man, we ran the experiment. We ran the experiment of offshoring all of our industrial jobs, of becoming a services and finance economy, and allowing Wall Street to come in and buy every asset of modern life and turn it into an investable, you know, line goes up asset. And what has that done? It's created a generation of kids who kind of are attracted to socialism. You have to fix that problem.
Well, kids that do feel, and you're correct, and I agree with you, the system is rigged. Kids feel like there are no options other than to burn it down.
Yes.
And that's the problem. And because they feel very frustrated.
And this is part of our job, is to provide an option that isn't burn it down, but is not just doing the same things that we've done for the past 40
years. They're also terrified.
That's exactly right. That was very well said. I would just say the one thing that's missing is the acknowledgement. I guess he sort of acknowledged it there at the end. That you do need to change things, that the way things are going are not good. It's not just socialist talking points that are telling people that. It's reality. It's statistical. It's experiential. I mean, people know that the economy doesn't work because they're trying to get jobs and create families, and they can't do it. So you can't just say, you know, communism, socialism isn't the right answer. And you have to acknowledge and recognize that, as I guess he did. He said, you know, we tried the offshoring thing and it didn't work. But I would say the way that you take that a step farther, and the way you actually pitch that, you say, I'm not a communist or a capitalist. I'm an American. I'm in favor of Americanism, and America has always had in our DNA opposition to major corporate control. Why do you think Teddy frickin' Roosevelt was the trust buster? That's what we need. There's nothing communist about trust busting. That's as American as apple pie. So you got to pitch that. That it's not just that, you know, our system's better. It's like, no, our government has to actually live that out.
And a microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here, is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Colin saying 21 years ago that, oh yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha ha ha, wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more, scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting that at the base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health, what it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatically when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
There you go, that's me. Me and DSA. Let me be perfectly clear. DSA is the enemy. They're the worst. They really are. But the Republicans aren't any better. So it's not like this is a good idea. It's like, but they're waving a Palestinian flag. It's like, okay, and 50% of the Republican representatives have an Israeli flag outside their office. This isn't a good... So I got to... a vote for one foreign bloc or another foreign bloc. I'll go for the one that isn't trying to merge itself with our military inextricably so that they have complete and total unrestricted access to all of our secrets and all of our technology. Yeah, no, I'll go for the idiots. Thank you. So J.D. Vance did exactly what every Republican should be doing, which is, well, at least he hinted at understanding the issue. He didn't actually make the case, but he did recognize that, yes, the American people, especially young people, are desperate for a solution, and you can't just condemn the solutions they're being offered. You have to actually offer a solution of your own. Not that complicated. And here's why. New Labor Department data just dropped. Corporate profits have risen 47% since 2020. Workers' wages have gained 12% in that same period. Meanwhile, groceries are up 35%, rent is up 40%, utilities up 28%, your paycheck grew by 12%, your bills grew 35%. The math is simple. You're getting poorer every year, even when you get a raise. You can't budget your way out of this. The system is designed so your income can never catch up to your expenses. That's not an accident. That's policy. Yeah, and that's a problem. And this needs to be corrected. And the way you correct this is by using the American government to dismantle monopolies, break up giant corporations, force them to compete, and also stop hiring Indians, also stop hiring foreigners so you can pay them less than living wage. Also, get rid of welfare so you don't have major corporations like Walmart subsidizing the wages they're able to offer by using taxpayer money. There's a lot of stuff you could do. None of it's being done. Instead, we are opening up the pension funds so that private equity can, you know, stave off bankruptcy for another couple years by pilfering away your trillions of dollars saved up. So it's not even just that, like, again, it's not that people are being propagandized into socialism. It's being proven that capitalism is exploitative, and our government, the people that claim to represent the American people, are in bed with the big business. So what are we going to do? It's like, just once again, we're being offered this choice between two utterly terrible options. And whether it's, you know, foreign aid or corporatism, the Republicans are also the bad guys. They might not be as bad, but yeah, this is the choice we're being offered. Either, you know, surrender your country to a bunch of foreign hostile communist subversives, or allow your country to be taken over by Jewish oligarchs. And it's like, how about we just stand up for ourselves and not be pulled down either one of these ridiculous and self-destructive lanes? This is retarded. Let's go now to let's go to clip three here. This is J.D. Vance and Joe Rogan talking about the Time article we covered yesterday, showing, and we mentioned it, we'll cover it maybe a little more today, the Israeli influence operation that is being carried out by Brad Parscale, Salem Media, and many other agents of Israel here in the United States. Let's watch clip three.
But I definitely think you have seen this very discreet, extremely well-funded campaign to try to derail the negotiation and try to derail the deal. And, you know, there's this Time article that came out yesterday. A friend sent it to me. It's like worth reading because it lists a bunch of people who have quite literally been paid by a former Trump campaign person who was himself paid by certain elements within the Israeli government. And those people are attacking me viciously for quite literally trying to accomplish the negotiation objective that the president set for the country. So
what is their position? Like, are they attacking you how?
Oh, it's social media posts. It's, you know, they're leaking to reporters. They're attacking me obsessively, saying that we should not be negotiating with Iran. We should just keep the military campaign going indefinitely. And that is their explicit position. And coming after me saying that, you know, people have come after me and say that I'm influenced by Qatar, that I'm influenced by foreign governments, that, you know, I take my marching orders from Tucker Carlson. And there's just so much bullshit out there, when what I'm actually trying to do is accomplish what the president of the United States told me to accomplish, which is a settlement of this that accomplishes our objectives. Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon. We have the free flow of oil and gas. And like, I should be clear, I don't actually mind. I don't mind that the, you know, let's say certain elements of the Israeli government want to criticize the deal or have disagreements about the deal. I don't even mind an effort to try to influence, you know, foreign governments try to influence the United States all the time. You know, Israel does it. Other countries do it. It's just sort of the nature of the beast. What bothers me is actually when Americans allow, meaning American leadership, allows that influence to affect their judgment and to affect what they are advocating for. That's what really bothers me. People are always going to try to influence the United States of America, whether they're allies of ours or whether they're enemies of ours. But again, when I open up the pages of Time magazine and I see that there's a literal foreign influence campaign being funded to tank the very deal that I was pursuing, and oh, by the way, many of the people who were receiving that money were actually attacking me in completely dishonest ways, you know, my response to that is, well, go to hell. I'm going to do what I have to do for the American people. I represent Americans first.
So again, yeah, here's the Time article. Trump's ex-campaign manager is running an Israeli influence operation targeting the MAGA base. You know, I think the difference here is that Israel is supposed to be our allies. They're propagandizing the American people to support policies that are against American interests but in favor of Israeli interests. They're doing this at a time when America has put itself in an extremely tenuous position on the behalf of and for the sake of Israel's territorial ambitions. So to then, you know, try to sponsor a propaganda campaign to get the American people to demand that we keep the war going because it benefits Israel. I mean, this is sinister beyond description. And the fact that it's being carried out by Trump's former campaign manager and being paid for by a bunch of Trump's biggest donors, who Trump is doing all of this for. This is different than your typical, you know, foreign influence operation, which is bad on the face of it already. But you have to understand that it's about more than just the money. It's about the connections. It's about the networks. It's about the coordination and collaboration in media so that a singular message is being put across, which convinces people that this is the most popular position, which, you know, changes their perception. The point is, this is beyond a lobbying campaign. It would be different if it was a lobbying campaign where foreign governments are going to DC to try to convince American politicians that America should be involved in, you know, one of their issues overseas. This is foreigners and Americans paying to propagandize Americans, knowing that they can create public pressure that they can use to manipulate the politicians. It's like more sophisticated, it's more devious, it's more subversive than, you know, your typical influence campaign. And of course, it's targeted at the very people who are supposed to be Israel's allies and who have done so much for Israel. So it's like an insult. It's like a act of disrespect. You've done so much for them, but the moment that our interests diverge, there's no understanding from them. There's no, you know, requisite, appropriate return of sentiment from Israel. We do everything for them. We ask them for a minor favor, and suddenly they launch a multi-million dollar campaign to try to destroy your entire political career. It's typical. It's very typical. Vance's tough talk on Israel is alienating some Jewish GOP donors. Okay, well, good. Maybe we can finally get back to actually doing something for the American people for once. Like, okay. Oh, no, please don't. Yeah, it's I'm glad that he's like personally offended by it. He should be. It should be personally offensive to him. But I wish he'd go farther. I really do. Let's go to clip 21 here, where J.D. Vance, again, on the topic of Israel, calls himself a reasonable moderate. Let's watch.
But again, when I open up the pages of Time magazine and I see that there's a literal foreign influence campaign being funded to tank the very deal that I was pursuing, and oh, by the way, many of the people who were receiving that money were actually attacking me in completely dishonest ways, you know, my response to that is, well, go to hell. I'm going to do what I have to do for the American people. I represent Americans first. And that's the way that I've tried to do this job. And I, you know, Joe, the crazy thing is, I'm like, people don't realize this. I'm actually in this, you know, there's this massive pro-Israel, anti-Israel debate in the United States of America. I'm like the reasonable moderate. And I think that's what so many people don't realize is, you know, I've been accused of being an anti-Semite. I've been accused.
For what reason?
Quite literally, for I've been accused of trying to. I guess some people say that I've insulted the Jewish religion, which is insane. Like I have a ton of respect for the Jewish religion. But I mean, if you talk
what
about
specifically, did you say
that? I don't know. I've never heard a good, compelling argument for why I'm an anti-Semite, even though I've been accused of being an anti-Semite by many people. But it's what I say to these guys is, look at public opinion. Look at the way young Republicans versus Republicans over the age of 65 approach this issue. Like right now, Israel is losing the public opinion battle in the United States of America. It is a simple and obvious fact. Donald Trump has said that publicly. It's a simple and obvious fact.
Why do you think
fact.
That is?
Well, let me finish this point.
Okay,
because, okay, my attitude is towards this is Israel is an ally. Like France or like the United Kingdom, we're going to have disagreements with them. We're going to have agreements with them. There are areas where we're going to have similar interests and areas where our interests are going to diverge. So my approach to this is to say, you know what? When we're partnered, great, let's work together. And we're not, let's just be honest about it. And I, for that, people attack me for being an anti-Semite or anti-Israel, and they don't see the writing on the wall that I'm actually just the guy advocating for a normal relationship with a normal country that's based around shared interest as opposed to based around, you know, something else. So why is Israel losing American public opinion?
Well, the narrative is that Israel has a very disproportionate effect on American politics.
Yeah, I see that. I see that narrative. I mean, I actually think that they look, do they try to influence American politics? Yes. But like I said earlier, a lot of other countries do. I think
to the extent that Israel does,
I think
though?
Some are better at it than others. I think the Israelis are definitely more effective at it than most. But I wouldn't say that they're the only effective country by any means that tries to influence American politics. I just think you have to be self-aware about it. I mean, why wouldn't you? It's a country of 9 million people. We have 330 million people. And so, of course, they're going to try to persuade Americans. They're going to try to move Americans in one direction or another. I think that's just the nature of the beast.
But it's more than that. The concern is that they're spying on American politicians, that they're there's concerns about funding. There's concerns about influence. There's concerns about whether or not politicians are – whether they're aligned with Israel or whether they're aligned with the United States first.
Well, there's certainly – like I definitely get those concerns, but my sense is that the way that all foreign influence works in the United States is people try to manipulate American public opinion, and then from manipulating a public opinion, they try to get the outcomes that they want. I mean, this thing is a very good example of this.
You know, I really do want to like J.D. Vance. Like, I really do. And, you know, he definitely gets it more than other Republicans. I mean, the answer, that answer is a good example. The answer about communism was a good example. But I'm not buying it. I don't know. I can't buy it. So a couple things there. He says he's a reasonable moderate when it comes to Israel. Me too. I'm a reasonable moderate too. I just think that their entire leadership class should be subjected to Nuremberg trials and the entire state itself should be dismantled and governed by some sort of international body, or just America should have it as a colony. So I'm the reasonable moderate. Actually, that's the moderate position, because to the left of me, just about everybody wants Israel to literally burn and everybody in it to burn. And they wouldn't shed a tear if every single Israeli baby was put on a spike. That's actually the sort of anti-Israel position on average in America these days. To be at all pro-Israel in this moment is actually an extreme position. He's like, I'm the reasonable moderate. I just think we should go to war so that they can bomb people in Lebanon. I'm the reasonable moderate that just wants to endlessly supply weaponry for them to kill innocent people. You know, moderately. I'm a moderate like that. No, the moderate position is Israel must be destroyed. That's the moderate position. The extreme position is that Israel should continue to exist at all in any form after what they've done to the world. That's an extreme position. How dare you? And then the other extreme position is everyone in Israel should die. I'm the peaceful moderate that just thinks their entire governmental system should be shattered and cast into the wind. But, you know, I'm alone here in my moderation. Yeah, so the reasonable moderate just wants to go to war with Iran on behalf of Israel. That's the reasonable thing to do. The reasonable thing to do is to fully merge our government with Israel so that they can no longer have to even ask us for money, but just get, you know, direct deposit into their bank account. He says, I want to treat Israel, they're our ally. Now, I would ask what proof he's seen of that. Allyship should go both ways. I don't think they do anything for us. They really don't. They really don't. You could say we get technology from them or whatever, but is that an ally? As a trade partner? Are they allies? Are they allies with us? I think that's debatable. What's not debatable is that Israel is not a normal country. He says, I think we should have a normal relationship with them like a normal country, but they're not a normal country. They're not like France or England. They're not Western. They're not a normal country in any possible way you could imagine. No normal country has, you know, a massive, wealthy, and influential population in America to sway the American people to whatever they want. A normal country hasn't been at war with its neighbors for 100 years and routinely massacres hundreds of them, dozens of them on a daily basis. That's still happening. Still every single day, I could read you a list of dozens of people that Israel is outright murdered that day. They're not a normal country. Why would we have a normal relationship with them? Our relationship with them is not normal, and they are not normal. Our relationship is one of slavery and subjugation and endless forgiveness and endless support. And any time that we even slightly break from their demands, then they try to utterly destroy us. Like, that's the other thing that's sort of missing from J.D. Vance's read of all of this is, like, where is any sense of balance or reasonableness when it comes to Israel? It's not, you know, he's talking about a multi-million-dollar nationwide PR campaign funded by Israel, calling him an anti-Semite, trying to destroy him, trying to ruin a peace process. Why? Because they were like offended that they were asked to stop blowing up Lebanese people for a little while. Again, this isn't reasonable. This isn't just, well, oh, it's just another interest. As if that's even a good comparison. It's like, who should we compare to? The Somalis? I mean, what other foreign population in America is beneficial at all? So it's not even a good argument, but if you line them up, I'd say Israel has probably cost us the most and benefits us the least out of any of them. Let's go finally to clip number 33 here. This is Vance talking to Rogan about Jeffrey Epstein and his connection to the Israeli upper crust. Let's watch.
He clearly had connections to the highest levels of American intelligence. He clearly had connections to the highest levels of Israeli intelligence. In fact, one of the interesting things the Epstein saga reveals about, and I try to make this point, is one of the reasons why I'm always careful and I say there are some elements within the Israeli government who don't like our peace process, because there are a lot of elements within the Israeli government that actually do like our peace process. They recognize that this indefinite campaign is not good for them either. And the Epstein thing is interesting, because as much as I know, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu, not a particularly popular person in the United States of America right now, Epstein seemed to be connected to the elements of the Israeli deep state that were left of center. Like, I've always found that fascinating. It wasn't like he was super connected to the right of center of Israeli politics. America, he was connected across.
There is no left or right in Israel. Let's just lay that out right now. There is no meaningful difference between Ehud Barak and Bibi Netanyahu. You know this if you read Rise and Kill First. I mean, Ehud Barak, like, he got famous because he dressed up like a woman and went into Lebanon and killed a bunch of people as part of an assassination, Operation Spring murder campaign. against the PFLB, I believe. So, like, to, you know, it's like, oh, he was involved in the right wing of Israeli politics. It's like, oh, really? So, Ehud Barak, one IDF assassin, got his start as a hired killer foreign operative. He's very different than Benjamin Netanyahu, who, by the way, held exactly the same positions in exactly the same organizations. There is no meaningful difference between the left and the right in Israel when it comes to matters of foreign policy or self-preservation. They're all on the same page. They're all on the same side. This is another distraction, which is why I say I can't bring myself to fully trust J.D. Vance, because he knows this, but he's playing the game. He's playing the left and right game. And again, I'm just sick of the assumption that it's that the well-being of Israel is the only thing that matters. And what I mean by that is, even in that argument, he's going, this is why I specifically talk about elements of the Israeli government that are against the peace process, because elements of the Israeli government are in favor of the peace process because they understand that this extended war isn't good for them either. I don't care what's good for them. Well, why do you think I care what's good for them? Why is that a thing? It's like, oh, I'm in favor of, you know, these Israelis because they have a different view of what will selfishly benefit them and them alone. It's like, what about any concern for America? What about if we are their number one ally that they depend on for absolutely everything? How about they be in favor of the peace process because it's good for us and it's good for humanity, and because war is bad and this is a pointless exercise in futility, which threatens major catastrophe across the world with shortages of oil and fertilizer and everything else? How about you just are in favor of peace for that reason? But that can't ever be the case. Every argument against Israel has to be made in a form in which you are explaining how actually you're arguing for the benefit of Israel. And it's like, I'm sick of this. I don't care if they think this is best for Israel. If we have peace, we should have peace because it's best for us, and Israel should deal with it because they're not us. And I don't care what happens to them. But the final thing is just the absurd sort of pantomime when they go, Israel's PR is really taking a hit. What do you think could be behind that? What do you think it could be? Why do you think it is? Is it TikTok? Do you think it's TikTok? It's all of the babies they're killing. It's all of the endless videos of all of the obviously innocent people, obviously targeted by Israel for murder because they're psychopaths. It's the stories about how they rape people to death in their prisons, and then the person who tried to expose that got harassed unto suicide. It's because they're bad people, and they don't control the media entirely now. Social media has allowed that fact to break through their cordon, break through their firewall. And now people are just seeing who they really are, and we all hate them because they're bad and evil. Glad I could help you figure that out. It's a real puzzler.
Bigly took 2 years to do this, our great sponsor. I'm not bitching. It's amazing. They got the highest rated. We published the studies, showed it to you, the big third-party testing firms. The highest quality gravity-fed filters cuts out all the thousands of different prevalent chemicals like atrazine and glyphosate to non-detectable levels, meaning zero, basically. Can't detect it. That's the highest rating. With the most beautiful stainless steel. 3-gallon system. You can get the stand if you want to. A lot of people don't even need the stand. Looks great in your kitchen, great at your business, but the most important thing is it cuts all these toxins out. This is the number one thing you should do for your family, for people, your coworkers. This is no more bottled water, no more, you dump swamp water in this, pool water, whatever, it cuts everything out, and it funds the operation. Everybody needs one of these. This is a home run. I am so impressed because I've been bitching at Bigly. Like 2 years ago, we started going, hey, we need this, here's the ratings, this is the highest thing, I want stainless steel. You can go out and find the company, the manufacturers, go to the highest quality, lowest price. They're selling crap. They don't even have the good filters. This isn't even stainless steel. It's plastic. For more than this, get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com. Commit to yourself to get the poisons out of the water. It's one of the biggest moves you can make to take control of your life, and it funds this operation. Order it now at thealexjonesstore.com. Take action. And there's a big sale that's going to end Sunday night at midnight. And that is Ultimate Life Force, the ultimate spike protein cardiovascular booster for everybody. That is 50% off. Bunch of other deals that are going to end soon at thealexandthestore.com. Wide selection of Patriot apparel and more. And the live feeds of the show are at thealexandthestore.com as well.
Nice try, globalist, but Alex Jones is still here, and he's not f***ing leaving.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.